Good afternoon. It is 2 p.m. and you know what we do at this time. Welcome to Community Focus. I am one of your two hosts for the program, Melvin C. Burns II. My friend and brother Gregory T., as you know, has been out for an extended period of time. We still pray for his recovery. Get well, brother Gregory T. We look forward to getting you back here in the studio with us. If you are in Muskegon, you can't thank me, but I'm going to tell you all the good news going on with the weather. We had a low today of 53 and a high of 80, and it's a beautiful fall Friday. Good day to go out and catch some Friday evening football. Tomorrow it will be sunny as well, low 64, high of 77. Sunday, it will be there will be a low of 65 and a high of 76, expected to be sunny as well. Monday, we have a 50% chance of rain, low 62, high of 73. On Tuesday, our chance of rain increases to 65%, low of 61, high of 66. And Wednesday, although it will be sunny, the temperatures drop a bit, low of 44, high of 63. And again, next Thursday, it will be sunny, but a low of 43. High of 63. So if you're like me, we are not complaining about this fall weather. We all know it could be worse, right? All right. Before we get to our guests, I know you all are used to my top five or top three, whatever I call them. If you have been following the news at all, if you're here in Michigan, we're a couple of days late, but we do finally have a budget here in the state of Michigan. By statute, it was supposed to be adopted by July 1. The state fiscal year ended September 30th. So late last night or early this morning, we did get a state budget adopted. You can find articles, but a few quick highlights from my friends out there. The budget does include a 24% new 24% tax on wholesale marijuana. So expect your prices to rise, and this is not analysis, but we've seen a lot of changeover and businesses close. So we'll see what the effects are. But 24% tax on wholesale marijuana. Also in the budget, we do see that school meals, there's $200 million placed in the budget for free breakfast and lunch for kids in school. So a lot of people are glad to see that including the budget change. Now it does include non-public school students as well. The per pupil funding in the state budget, we had a slight increase, a little over $400. The per pupil funding in Michigan this coming budget will be $10,050 per pupil. We know a lot of schools were kind of on hold and tapping into reserves on pins and needles, but we now have the school funding worked out and everybody can take off and run from there. We did get additional funds put into the budget, around $1 billion for the Michigan roads. That'll be split up between your counties, your municipalities, a couple of state road projects, new funds included for local bus operations, some airport improvement dollars, and some rail grade transportation funds. So we do have some dollars going to the roads. Some of that will come from the corporate income tax. And then one final one I wanted to tell you. You may enjoy this one too. Michigan, sort of following the lead of the federal government, will no longer be taxing overtime and tipped wages. So a few extra dollars in your pocket. They said it'll probably cost the state around $180-200 million. But let's see, folks will turn around, hopefully, and spend those dollars. It'll help you buy new homes, new cars, some other areas. Maybe we'll see the state income tax increase a little bit. But those changes are expected to go into effect January 1. So we have our budget, folks. We're off and running till we start the cycle again next spring. All right, that is our five items for today. I want to now turn your attention. I'll thank our guests for sitting here patiently waiting. Folks, would you welcome to our program for the very first time, Mr. Cody Chip Chipman, as he's known, Chip Chipman, as he's known by his friends and family. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
Oh, good, good. First time to program, right?
Yeah, first time on a radio or anything like this. Yeah. So,
all right. Tell folks a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. So, my name's Chip Chipman. I'm a member of the State Committee for the Michigan Republican Party. I'm one of two folks that are representing the Muskegon area within the state party. Prior to that, I was a candidate for the 87th State House District. I ran against Will Snyder in 2024 and lost that race. But I'm a Muskegon native. I was born at Hackley Hospital, graduated from Orchard View, went on to the University of Michigan, have a degree in history, spent a little bit of time in D.C. working for a nonprofit political group right out of college, spent some time in Detroit, probably about 3-4 years downtown working in Quicken Loans. Then I returned to Muskegon in about 2020.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've been back in Muskegon about 5 years.
Yep.
Okay. So let's talk a bit about what's going on. Well, let's talk first about your involvement in the Republican Party.
Yeah, certainly. So it's been interesting. I really first got involved locally when I was 18. So I'm 31 now. I was back in 2012. Mm-hmm. I was elected as a precinct delegate at 18 to represent the Muskegon area, just at the county convention. And then I ended up going to the state convention in 2013. And that was my first interaction really with the higher level party politics. Mm-hmm. At that time, the only reason I got involved is I was a part of the Ron Paul movement at the time. Mm-hmm. I was part of the libertarian faction, which at that time was very much pushed off to the side. We were, you know, pro-cannabis legalization, which at that time it wasn't legal anywhere. Sure. Recreationally. We were, you know, more pro-open borders than other folks. And it's been an interesting journey, I guess, the last like 10 years. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. One for, again, we'd like to educate folks. Mm-hmm. Precinct delegates, for a lot of people that maybe talk about wanting to get involved.
Yeah.
Tell people what that is, because that's a good entry point for people who maybe work on campaigns, volunteer to sort of get your hands wet.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's for either party as well. Sure. There's mirrored party structures, so whether you're Democrat or Republican, really, if you want to become serious about getting your friends and family mobilized, is becoming a precinct delegate. And what a delegate is it's a representative within the party, and you're assigned, if you look at your voter ID card, mm-hmm. You'll have a precinct assigned to you. I'm trying to think what the higher level is. It's like a ward. I think it was ward and then precinct. But yeah. And essentially, the way they map is, you know, within your precinct, there's maybe a couple square blocks. And if you're elected into that position with the party, you're kind of the point person for the party in that neighborhood. So sure. If you're going to go knock doors for the campaign, if you want to solicit donations, whatever, or you just want to be the person that's, you know, it's just kind of you're the ground soldier almost for the party. Yeah. So,
and then you're are you a representative at the state convention when you're a precinct delegate?
No, not immediately. So okay. There's tiers to it. So if you're elected a precinct delegate, you'll get called to a county convention, okay. which they have semi-regularly, depending on what's going on, sure. Usually when they have a state convention coming up. But and then from there, if they do have a state convention, you can get nominated and voted on by your fellow precinct delegates to go mm-hmm. represent a larger area at the state convention. Mm-hmm. And then on years where you have a presidential election, we obviously, both parties have a national convention, and that's when they'll send the delegates that actually vote for, you know, the presidential nominees and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. a lot of times that's a big honor if you sure. can, you know, get elected from your local level to your county convention to your state convention, and then be a representative at the national convention.
Okay.
And as a side note, one thing that President Trump has mentioned recently that's never been done, as far as I know, is typically the national conventions are done every 4 years of the presidential election years. Mm-hmm. He's calling for the Republican Party to do one this midterm election in 2026. So, hasn't been confirmed yet, but that's an idea he's been floating. So, you know, we're prepared at the state level if we are going to need to elect national delegates okay. at our upcoming convention next year.
Yeah. So. And a lot of those precinct delegate positions go unfilled because sometimes, you know, and both parties getting folks to, and folks, you have to go sometimes go to the back of the ballot, mm-hmm. you know, to see those precinct delegates, but those positions are there. And again, it's a good way to get involved, you know, if you don't want to get involved in the process, and particularly in our day and age, learn more about how the process actually works.
Yeah, absolutely. And that really is an important thing. You know, it really does go unfilled far too often. I think a lot of folks are just simply unaware of it.
Sure.
And then honestly, when you're in it, you're almost kind of a politician in training because you go to those county conventions and it's going to have Robert's Rules of Order. You're going to be in a very parliamentary type setting as they're organizing it. And honestly, it's fascinating for me, and I'm grateful to be able to have done it when I was 18, because you get an idea of democracy in action and how messy it can be, because there will be some folks there that they have Robert's rules memorized, and they're going to find every little parliamentary trick, even at the smallest level, to try to angle their position in. And it can be overwhelming, but if you're willing to make it work, I think it allows you to be more accepting of other people with different beliefs and just lean into like the hard conversations that people need to have rather than say something witty on Facebook and log off.
So let's talk about the Republican Party. What are some of the things we wanted to make sure we cover today in terms of the party? What things are going on now here in Muskegon County as well as in Michigan?
Yeah, I would say right now, because it's not an election year, and you know, obviously in Michigan we have long winters, so I think a lot of folks are enjoying their summer right now. But it is starting to get the gears turning for 2026, and really we're looking for volunteers, candidates for positions, as well as precinct delegates, folks to fill it. I would say one thing I guess that's worth mentioning is a lot of folks are circulating petitions right now, and there are some potential ballot measures that will be coming up potentially next year if, you know, they get enough signatures to be on the ballot. So I know one that's going around is that's being circulated by mostly by folks on the political right is a citizens only vote, which would require proof of citizenship and I believe an ID requirement as well if you go into the ballot box. Another one that's going around that really has a mix from different folks is ranked choice voting.
Say that one again.
Ranked choice voting.
Ranked choice voting.
Yeah. Which, if people aren't familiar, that's like the, system that New York City adopted a few years ago, where rather than have one person, one vote, you're actually selecting a preference with all candidates. Like I would maybe have, you know, Eric Adams is number one and then, Cuomo's number two or whatever, if you wanted to do it. I can kind of give my opinion personally. I'm a little opposed to that because I think right now when we have such little trust in elections, the idea of auditing those and how long it takes and it removes one person, one vote, it can become very difficult, but that is a petition going around.
You know, just to talk about that a little bit, you know, a majority versus a plurality brings a whole nother element into, you know, just New York, however you feel about it. You know, you'll get a mayoral candidate that 25-30% of the people supported, and that just brings a whole nother dynamic when you think about it, whether it's parties or even within the same party. You know, we don't get a majority, you know, it's, you know, it just brings, again, it brings a whole nother dynamic.
Definitely. Which I have always been a fan. Actually, you have like two round voting where you have a plurality, then top two go, and then whoever gets the majority moves on. I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think that's typically how we do it in our municipal style. And then the other petition I know that's going around is the Axe the Tax, and that's seeking to eliminate property taxes in the state of Michigan. So the idea is, you know, it would benefit all people, but I always think it makes a lot of sense, especially for retired folks or people living on fixed income, Social Security. You're getting $1,000 a month from Social Security, but you still have to pay your property taxes. I think, you know, if you own your property, you own your property. So,
And again, it's fine if you don't notice thinking that through. What would you replace it with? I mean, it's our public schools are propped up by, you know, we go to, you know, community colleges, some money goes to the state. So would there be a replacement or?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a replacement would make the most sense, you know, whether it be a consumption tax or something where you opt in a little bit more just to, once again, protect housing, I think, for folks overall. Who are there, because it also provides another safeguard against, you know, gentrification and extreme rising property values and that can, you know, erase a local community. But that is a good question. You know, what would the shortfall be? I don't know if I have the answer. In a place like Muskegon, we do have a city income tax, so you could always lean into that more and have direct subsidies from the city into the school districts or things of that sort. But it would probably be something difficult for the county government to figure out.
I'm a student of government in my other lifetime. But, you know, just like we talked earlier about the overtime being taxed. I mean, again, it sounds good. If I'm collecting overtime, which I don't think I ever have in my life, but it sounds good. But I always say, okay, now that money that and we're talking about maybe $180 million, so now what happens? Do we just not collect it or do we get it from somewhere else? And whatever you think, that's what my first thought is. Okay, now it sounds good to everybody, but now what are we going to live without the money or are we going to get it from somewhere else? And obviously things that politicians have to think about is which one do you do?
Yeah, certainly. And this is one thing too, we're thinking back, like, you know, if you're like in a delicate position, you have to kind of make like tough decisions in your votes, but it is show how hard it gets. Cause I guess my thought is my immediate like gut reaction, you know, if I could be made king, I'd be like, well, we would just make the system so much more efficient and we mm-hmm. would make it so we're doing direct UBI payments for folks. And that way we're cleaning the administrative and bureaucratic cost of administering aid for food subsidies, health subsidies, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like that clean cut issue, but I'm not king. We don't live in a monarchy, right? Sure, and sure. That's the one thing is like, I'm sorry if I'm a little bit on a tangent here, is when folks are like criticizing, you know, members of, you know, our of like our legislator, like they get one vote out of a couple hundred people. Yeah. And a lot of times they are forced to make compromises, you know, with the other side. And so it's just all convoluted. It is a hard yeah. thing to do because it is so convoluted.
Yeah. You know, we talked about the state, but obviously we have a Democratic governor. Mm-hmm. We have a Democratic House. I mean, a Republican House, a Democratic Senate. And, you know, nobody's jumping up and down doing backflips about the budget, but somebody got something. And sometimes that word compromise sounds like a dirty word to people.
Yeah.
And you know, again, I think it's good that the state requires a balanced budget. You know, I think it's good. It makes people have to do their job.
Yeah. And they were up to what, 4 a.m. last night, I think it yeah. was. Like it was a late night vote.
I've been fouled the last few days, and yesterday I was like, well, like they're kind of close, but there's some things. But me, I liked I did it. Everybody feels like we got to get it done. And the idea of, you know what, we got to figure it out. And so you get some things you want, some things you compromise. There's going to be a fight, but you know, again, this is just my opinion of, but we got to, at least till next year when we fight again, we got to figure out something where, you know, not getting a school funding affects every school district. Mm-hmm. You know, the budget not being passed affects everybody, liberal or conservative, Democrat or Republican. It affects everybody. And so we all got to figure it out together.
Yeah.
And so I like that about the state of Michigan. Obviously, you know, we're a state that, you know, we can be bipolar, as some people say. Mm-hmm. But I like to think Michiganders are probably one of the more, my opinion, you can share your opinion. Mm-hmm. I think we're probably one of the electors that really kind of look at our candidates more than maybe some states, or we can, and we go back and forth. We don't always stick with Democrats. We don't always stick with Republicans. We kind of have a history of doing that.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, I think in the last three election cycles, you know, looking at the presidential, I think we were mm-hmm. the thinnest margin on either side, you know, throughout sure. the last three. So yeah. That is true. Yeah. And I do love our culture overall. I think mm-hmm. one thing where it gets a little interesting is there is like, I feel like there's Detroit and then there's everyone else in the state a lot of times. Yeah. You know, there is a lot of power concentrated in the population centers, sure. but that's just sure. kind of how it is.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And it's changed over here, but you're right. It's mm-hmm. the rest of the state in. Then there's Southeast Michigan, you yeah. know, and they're a whole nother, because even I look at the bills like money for roads and then two special projects, the airport in Detroit and some other project in Detroit. They ought to get their own special stuff yeah. when they do government.
Well, and yeah. I think it was the ice storms that came through late last winter. North Michigan is still trying to receive federal funds. I don't know if any of that was earmarked in the budget that came through, but I know
I'm trying to remember. Yeah. I don't think they was. I know there was a push for that. I was trying to read all this last night, this morning. I don't think they got anything special for the ice storms. I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, because I know one of the representatives, I think it was Fairburns. I think he represents mm-hmm. right at the tip of the Lower Peninsula. He was speaking about that recently of like, yeah. you know, he's touring, he's speaking to his constituents, but he's one vote and like yeah. all of Northern Michigan has one congressional vote. So trying to get the leverage for federal aid is hard.
And for Lower Michigan, that's like another country. It's like, I mean, you know, we don't, yeah. I mean, we don't think about the Upper Peninsula as much, you know, in some mm-hmm. things. And that's a good case where he's got to try to make his case to the whole Lower Peninsula that, hey, we're still suffering up here from
yeah.
from those storms that, in the middle of summer, trying to convince people though that that's still an issue there.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. yeah. So let's talk a little bit, a little broader. We got to, you know, I try to stay away from national news just because, man, you just get a headache sometimes.
Yeah.
But let's just talk a little bit about the Republican Party in general. Mm-hmm. How are things going? Are you getting new people interested? You getting a lot of calls? How are things? You know, I know it's an off year, yeah. but how are things going in the general?
I think so. I mean, it's a very changing party, and that's yeah. kind of why I brought up earlier, like I was part of a libertarian faction, mm-hmm. you know, like it's strange too, because I think folks that are outsiders looking in, mm-hmm. you know, like they very much, and this is my personal experience, but it's mm-hmm. happened a lot, is, you know, you get heckled, like you get called a fascist, racist, or whatever mm-hmm. for having, mm-hmm. you know, what I think are relatively moderate beliefs. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's interesting because the party is very diverse and we're not a monolith, you know, and we realize, especially at the state committee, where you have like a libertarian wing, you have a Trump wing of the party, you have the more traditional neocon George Bush wing, but then you also have, you know, and a lot of it's associated with Trump, but some of it's unique where you have this more populist wing that's growing, folks that are willing to say, hey, we support unions and we want people to have the right to advocate for themselves. And I think that's one thing that you've seen. And I call it a party shift in the last couple of years where a lot of working class Democrats have felt left behind by the Democrat Party.
Okay.
And Republicans have become more and more critical of large capital and corporations, whether it be, you know, big tech or big pharma, and where folks that had those views have felt forced out of the Democrat Party. They've actually found welcoming arms within the Republicans. So it's messy, but everyone's getting along. And I think we are forming together more so in a unified stance than we had in the last two cycles, where we recognize we want to fight for the common man and the common American. And how can we do that in a way that benefits them the most while not detrimenting the rest of our society?
Okay. Yeah. So how does the party, again, you're not responsible. Yeah. In your opinion, how does the party message that to say, you know, we think our tent's broader and it represents a broader interest than maybe has been represented in the past? How does the party message that?
Yeah, I think they do it by just having open ears. And I guess that's what I want to say is, you know, if you're someone who's on the fence and you're not happy with the Democrat Party, come to our local meetings, reach out to myself. Can I get my phone number out? I'll get my phone
number. Yeah, you can. You sure can.
Yeah. I'd say, so if anyone who wants to get connected with the party, my name again is Chip Chipman, and my cell phone is 231-571-4168. Or you can find me on social media, Facebook under Chip Chipman as well, and I can get you connected.
Okay.
And because it really is, that's what democracy is. Is a lot of people, we want to hold our beliefs and like maybe do a post on social media, but it is leaning into sign up to be a precinct delegate, talk to your neighbors and talk to fellow Republicans how you want us to advocate more for workers' rights, whether it be eliminating tax on overtime or tips to make sure the folks that you know, are getting less than a minimum wage because they're a tip-based industry are able to keep all of those wages. And I think that's one way where, I mean, no taxes is kind of Republican stance, but it's really looking out for the common worker rather than saying, oh, the large corporation's getting a tax break, you know?
Okay. So tell me about your journey from libertarian to Republican Party.
Yeah. So I was always a Republican, I guess, but I was on the libertarian wing of it. So I was very much like on the Ron Paul side with it. I have adjusted my beliefs some, and I think one reason for that is there's an anticipation among libertarians that everyone is going to be good, well-intentioned actors. And unfortunately, as I became older, I realized that wasn't the case. And not only that, but while I'm not in favor of a giant social safety net, I do think some social needs do need to be provided, you know, and ideally at the local, the more local level and the more decentralized, the better. But through volunteer work and other things, it's this kind of reality hit me where it's like, we can't eliminate like social security payments. There are too many people I know personally who rely on those, and they're not bad people. They're not lazy people, but they do need and have a right to receive this really token amount. So, and then I think seeing as well, the abuse that big business can have when it gets into bed with government, which is kind of a typical libertarian belief, but libertarians, especially a decade ago, they would make excuses for those big businesses and just blame the government. But ultimately, once again, my personal belief, not necessarily a party belief, is the corporations of America have become so intermingled with the government between lobbying and just the big money to choose the elections. It's tainted, and it really feels like the common person doesn't have a voice. And so I hope that through the grassroots effort, it may be vulgar at times, it may be unprofessional, but it is getting the voice out that the people want, or at least expressing their concern.
Okay. So let me ask you, and I've been at the station maybe 10 years now. And we started off, we interview candidates, Democrats, Republicans, Independents at election time. And so that's how I started here before we did this. But so what prompted you to run for elected office?
Well, honestly, kind of COVID. So I was,
I've heard worse answers, believe me.
Yeah. Well,
I actually had a guest there that asked him a question. He was like, So after about 30 seconds of silence, I was like, okay, let me think of something else.
Yeah. Just doing it to do it. Yeah. Well, I guess what happened for me, so I was very politically active in college. I led a Young Americans for Liberty student group there, which was a nonpartisan, liberty-based kind of philosophy group. And I ended up leading a lawsuit against the University of Michigan during my time there because I uncovered essentially unconstitutional policies they had on the books that they were using to limit funding for conservative and Christian groups. So we were able to settle with them, and it was probably my biggest like legacy, I guess I could say I have politically. And so I was very active then. I had my first job in DC, and I was working there. And honestly, I got burnt out by politics because it very much is like, if you're a genuine person and you don't want to go to every happy hour to try to manipulate different people to get them to your network, it was just exhausting. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do this. I want to live a more normal life. But then what the actions the state of Michigan took during the pandemic, I felt were too extreme and moved too far against people's personal rights, whether it be a business owners or an individual's. And I felt a sense of guilt and remorse that I was not in a position to have greater influence on it when I think I could have helped people and protect their freedoms better. So following the COVID pandemic, I really started leaning back into politics again for the first time in probably like 4 or 5 years. And I felt different feelings again where it gets exhausting, but I think it is worthwhile to know the sacrifice is hopefully promoting good. Like I hope at the end of the day, I hope I do a net positive for the world. So
it would be fair to say, you know, having been in DC, that, the world of state and local government is so different than federal. I mean, it just, that sense of having your hands on affecting people's lives. And that's my, no, I don't want you, that's just not your sense of it. That's fine. But
yeah, it is. I mean, it's a very sterile place, and it's a very much like a place where you kind of want to be, I don't want to say careful because most people are great in general, like 99.9% people, but it is definitely more of a cutthroat, you know, business just in general. So you can kind of feel it around with people. And it felt very sterile, and a lot of it is AstroTurf. So like I will give like full transparency for it. Like the like organization I worked for was like heavily funded by billionaires. You know, like we worked in a building that they owned, and then they donated to our organization, and we paid the rent back to them from that donation. And it was just a way for them to cycle money through a 501c3 while advocating for their political beliefs. And that's the way the game's played on both sides. That's how it has to be done. But you do it, and like, I mean, I grew up in a trailer park in the Muskegon Township, you know, and it's just like seeing the way, like, and the amount of money being spent for this, it's just like nauseating. And it does, it was just a disconnect for me where I wasn't either socially mature enough for it or bitter enough to embrace it. I don't know.
I can come back to when I'm old and bitter. So, our time's running out, but I always ask people this question. What did you learn being out on the campaign trail?
That's a good question. I don't want to say that most people are passive, but I mean, that's kind of it, unfortunately, or not passive, maybe apathetic. And I think that's one thing I'd really want people to do, especially if they want to go to, you know, these events is, apathy has kind of taken over the soul of America. And when you have people in apathy who don't find meaning in anything, it is very easy for them to get angry over minute things. And I think everyone should remain hopeful. If you woke up today, if you can hug your family, you know, even if times are a little tough, you know, you have somebody you can reach out to and speak to, just focus on the positive and don't be apathetic. And try to maintain hope and love for your neighbor. Well, love thy neighbor, I guess. So, can I pitch one event?
Yeah, we got about 30 seconds. So I was going to say, I'll give you the last word before we wrap up here.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, just follow up again. If folks want to message me in any way, my number is 231-571-4168. If you want to get involved as a precinct delegate, let me know. But we do have some events. We have a Freedom Roundup. You can see it on the GOP Facebook on October 17th. We'll have some candidates coming for, I believe, local office as well as U.S. Senate.
Where will that take place?
I have the flyer real quick.
We'll get that in.
And then the 3rd District is also hosting a gentleman named Jason Jones on November 8th. So let me just confirm this real quick. So that Freedom Roundup, it's going to be at the Polish Falcon Club. There is a cost to entry, but if you go to MuskegonGOP.com/events, you can register beforehand. And then if you go to MIGOP3D.org, you can see the American Border Crisis with Jason Jones is going to be event hosted.
All right, folks, this has been Chip Chibin with the Muskegon County Republican Party, as well as a state committeeman. Chip, thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah.
Hope we get a chance to talk again in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate you guys reaching out and providing me with this opportunity.
All right. Folks, we're going to take a brief break, and then we will be back with our next guest. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Community Focus. I'm your host, Melvin Burns. I want you to join me in welcoming back to our program, Miss Tara Carson. Miss Carson.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. I think last time I interviewed you, you were like, oh, I'm nervous. I haven't done this before. And I think I just poked you and you talked for an hour.
Right.
No, I'm just kidding. How things are going well?
Going well. I'm good. Still at work. I thought I would be back in Muskegon in time, but I'm still sitting here at my office.
Oh, that's quite all right. Yeah. Why don't you tell folks who are you are here representing today?
Okay, I'm representing, well, first of all, good afternoon, West Michigan, Muskegon. I am Tara Carson. I am the president and founder of the HBCU Club of Muskegon, but also I am the assistant director for Educational Opportunity Center at Grand Valley State University.
All right. Now, the last time we talked, I think it was just prior to you all's trip.
Yes.
So tell folks, for first, let's talk about the HBCU Club and what it does. And I want you to tell me about your last trip and okay.
All right. So HBCU Club Muskegon, we service students throughout the West Michigan area from grade 7 through college. We provide career and college program services, mentorship, college advising, but most of all, advocacy in the history of historically Black colleges and universities. So the last time we was on the radio, we just got back from our fourth annual college tour. Our tour for 2025 was in North Carolina, in the great city of Greensboro, North Carolina. Awesome, awesome tour. We had the opportunity to take 42 students.
Wow.
Yes, 42 students, and we had roughly about 7 staff. So okay. It was awesome to see the students' facial expression, receiving that Southern hospitality, but just learning the culture of the various HBCUs that we visited. We went to Livingstone College, North Carolina A&T, North Carolina Central, Winston-Salem University, Shaw University, and Bennett College for Women.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. So tell me, what's the comment, one of the comments you hear most often from students once they take this trip and have this experience?
They always say, Miss Tara, the people down south are really nice to us.
Yeah. And that's true.
I don't know how to take that, but that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Yes.
But on the flip side of the note, it's just the kids is so amazed of history that they were not aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And the knowledge about different Black history. And on the campus of North Carolina A&T University, there is a statue of four gentlemen back in the 60s. Mm-hmm. They went to a restaurant downtown Greensboro and were trying to be serviced. And unfortunately, the opposite counterparts did not want to service these four Black gentlemen, which ended up to be a sit-in at that particular restaurant called Woolworth Restaurant. And that protest went on for a very long time. And to this day, they turned the restaurant into a museum.
Yes.
So the students had the opportunity to go and tour the museum. Some of the kids came out of that crying. Some of the kids came out of that mad. Why they had to treat us like this? some of the kids was asking questions. But the real history was when we went to the statues, mm-hmm. on A&T campus, and they actually got the real in-depth history of those four gentlemen, yes. and what they endured and how they overcame and what starting not a movement, but start of the Black revolutionary movement, yes. you know, fighting yes. for our rights.
Sure.
So that's one sure. of the things that was going on back in the 60s, you know, fighting for their rights.
Yes. Do students still have this misperception about how serious academics are at the Black HBCUs?
Yes. 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 And I'm happy that we had the opportunity. Like for A&T, they have a wellness day once a month.
Mm-hmm.
And for those individuals who are listening out there on today, wellness month is where there's no classes, faculty is not working, professors not working. They all come on campus. They had yoga going on.
Yeah.
They had free art going on. You can go to the rec center, you know, work out or play basketball. They have vendors out there, like mental health awareness information out there. They had a live DJ. They was barbecuing on campus. It was just a free day where kids got a chance to just relax, unwind. And I think it's needed across the country simply because the fate of our youth right now,
yes.
dealing with mental health and their mental wellness, is so much needed right now. And it's so key that we as leaders, we as, you know, whatever role that we play in the community, start observing and encouraging and assisting our students when it comes to mental health awareness and yes. wellness.
Yes.
Because it's definitely needed.
Yes. Are students also surprised to see white students at the HBCUs?
Yes. Yes, yes, especially when we was at Winston-Salem.
Uh-huh.
At Winston-Salem, it's a very diverse campus, and mm-hmm. the students had an opportunity to, you know, talk to the students on campus and ask about their campus experience. And I'm so happy that the students, Winston-Salem students, took the time out just to talk to our students,
yes,
and just give them their perspective of their college life and what they are going through. And yeah. so it just opened up the students' eyes, like, okay, they going through something similar to what I'm going through.
Sure. Now, the HBCU Club of West Michigan is not just about taking a trip every year with students. So let's talk a little bit more about the club and what you all do.
And so the club itself, we focus on academics. We focus on making sure that, number one, you're keeping your grades up. In order to be in the HBCU Club Muskegon, you must have a minimum of a 2.5 GPA to be a part of the club and maintain that 2.5 and above throughout your high middle school and high school years, because we do service middle school students. But okay. one of the things that we try to really focus on is careers. Where do you see yourself once you graduate from high school? Do you see yourself going to college? Do you see yourself doing an apprenticeship program or a certification program? Or do you just see yourself just going straight into workforce development? And that's where we come in and provide those resources that is available in our community, and send out referrals and have guest speakers to come in and talk to our students about the various opportunity of post-secondary education once they graduate from high school. Because now we are in a season where college is shifting. It's more trades now,
yes.
because all our seasoned trade members, they are getting ready to retire. So now we have to really think outside of the box as far as what type of support services, what type of opportunities that we can give our young people, but also it has to be in the mind frame of the young people. What do they want to do? It's not all about trying to be a YouTuber or be an influencer or, you know, living a particular lifestyle. This is something that you have to deal with for the next 30, 40, 50 years of your life.
Okay.
And then the key is, how can we make impact to our youth in the community?
Yes.
As leaders, it doesn't matter if you're a leader in the public sector, private sector, whatever sector you may be in. As a leader, as a professional, what are you doing to pour life into the students, into our community? Are you coming up to the schools and talking to the students about the career you are in and why you chose the career to be in? Are you want to make that impact? So once you do graduate from wherever you do, come back home and start a career in Muskegon. If you feel like Muskegon is not the best fit place for you, go somewhere and start your career. But the goal is to educate our youth, not only in the education realm, but the social realm as well. Teaching them those important life skills, teaching them that they have to be aware of their surroundings, mm-hmm. of what they are doing and how they do things, because you never know who is watching you out in the community and
yes.
what impact you can make.
Yeah. We have a comment from one of our listeners, Mr. Anthony Malone, down in Indiana. He says there was a minority mental health initiative more than 50 years ago. It was that awareness that drove me into obtaining my DBA in behavioral health. And so when you talk about that idea of focusing on the mental health of students, you know, and their mental well-being, you know, that a university recognizes that. No, not only that, but the influence can have on students, even in their career choices, I think is significant.
Yeah, absolutely. As a retired special education teacher,
okay,
you know, I saw it, you know, firsthand. I taught from elementary all the way up to high school, especially in the field of behavior disorders, dealing with sure. students who have serious behavior issues. And a lot of times it was the behavior, but the behavior was caused by other things was going on in their life.
Sure.
And they wasn't able to express their feelings about, you know, how they are feeling. So what do? They act out. They try to get attention. You know, they do different types of behaviors to cause themselves to get suspended from school. But if you just sit down and listen to the student, just listen to the student and just hear what that student needed to say. They just want somebody to listen to them at times. And a lot of times as adults, we either try to push them away or, okay. I'll get back with you. But now we are in a state of crisis where our students need us, especially our Black professionals. We have to step up to the plate as community leaders and let the students know we are here to listen. We are here not to judge. We are here to try to fix those breaks. We are here. Let's come up with a plan. So if we start speaking that language and talking the language, I think behaviors will curb down. I think their self-esteem will go up. I think they will start feeling value within themselves as who they are as an individual.
Yes. My partner on the radio, Gregory T. Roberts, says, how early should we start these conversations with our youth?
As soon as they can talk.
Okay.
Because, and I'm going to tell you the reason why. I have three children, 21, 18, and an 8-year-old. My 8-year-old, we just had a conversation this morning, 5:30 this morning. She was sharing to me. She woke up out of her sleep, just sharing to me about some things, how she was feeling. And as a mother, but also as a former therapist, I sat and listened to her. And I put on my therapist mode.
Mm-hmm.
And I started asking her questions of why she's feeling the way that she's feeling. She's 8 now. Very intelligent. I think she's been here before. I promise you. I feel like she's been here before. So in a whole nother realm. But the dialogue that me and my 8-year-old have is totally different with my dialogue with my 18 and my 21-year-old.
Yeah.
But all three of them, you know, talk about the same thing, and I have to treat it differently according to their needs. And like the biggest thing, like I tell my oldest too, I need you to be proactive, then reactive.
Okay.
Constantly complaining and fussing, doing this is not going to solve it. What are the steps you are going to take that you won't have to feel the way you are feeling? What steps are you going to do that is going to be different next time? Then we won't have the same conversation again. So now I do that with my 8-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
When she feel like she getting frustrated or feel like she can't get her way, instead of me trying to raise my voice or yell as typical Black parents do.
Not that there's not a time for that. Not that there's not a time when that's not necessary.
I'm learning also. I'm learning. Now, you basically got to talk to them.
Yes.
Not talking to them as an adult, but talking to them as a little person, their age, and try to figure out what's going on in their brain so we can help them overcome whatever anxiety or stress that they are going in.
Sure, sure. So they get counselor and mom all wrapped in one package. Yeah. So for parents listening, what age do you take students into the HBCU club, and what do they need to do to get them involved?
Yes. We have our first meeting on tomorrow, Saturday, October the 4th, from 11 to 12:30 p.m. at Kareem's Restaurant. Come out to Kareem's. The reason why I chose to have it at Kareem's Restaurant, it put it on my heart, and I was talking to my co-founder, Arbor Coleman, about it. Because, one, we need to support our Black businesses, first and foremost.
Yes.
I'm all about supporting Black businesses. Two, with everything that's going on with the reconstruction of Broadway at this current time, Kareem has lost a lot of business, unfortunately, mm-hmm. because of the road construction. So I said, well, why don't we have our meeting there? The parents go be there. They can purchase them something to eat. Mm-hmm. We can sit there, talk. I want the community to come out. Wear your college t-shirt. It doesn't matter what college you went to, HBCU, Michigan State, UM, Grambling, whomever. We want the community to come out and support Kareem because she does a lot for the community. She put on every Thanksgiving. She offered Thanksgiving dinner to the community. She wasn't able to have her community fair on this year. Mm-hmm. So this is a way to give back. Come to Kareem between 11 and 12:30. Come get information about the HBCU Club. That's what we will be having our first meeting. Not only we will be having our first meeting, we will be having our 2026 college tour information session. So if parents, if you think your students are interested going on our 2026 college tour, our information meeting will be on tomorrow between 11 and 12:30. You will get all the information about our college tour, the schools that we will be attending in 2026. The flyer is posted on our HBCU Club Muskegon page, the HBCU Club page on Instagram, and my personal page, my personal page, Tara Person.
Okay.
But we want the community to come out and support Kareem.
Yeah. So how soon after your first trip do you start planning the next year's trip?
We have already started planning for our 2027 trip already.
Okay.
2026 is already planned. Okay. We already know where we're going, what we're going to be doing.
Well, where are we going 26?
26. Yes, we are doing the Midwest.
Are you waiting to tell everybody tomorrow? Can I get a scoop today?
I'm going to tell everybody right now. 2026 is the Midwest tour. Okay. So we will be going to the following schools in 2026: Central State University, Wilberforce University, Kentucky State University, Simmons College of Kentucky, Tennessee State University, Fisk University, and McHarry Medical Center. Woo-hoo-wee. So students who are interested in going into the medical field.
Okay.
TSU and McHarry has a dual enrollment program going on right now. I think it's in its fourth or fifth year. So if you start off at TSU, you will finish going to medical school at McHarry. This is a wonderful opportunity, especially males. They are looking for Black males.
Okay.
So if you're thinking about going to the medical fields, this will be a great opportunity for you to attend our 2026 college tour. But I'm going to tell you this, our 2027 college tour, we are hitting the friendly skies.
Uh-oh.
We will be on a bus, but started off, we will be in the air.
Okay.
So that's information to come.
That's all right. 27. Okay.
Yeah.
Good. So now we have to talk about this because none of this happens for free.
No.
So let's talk about support, resources, fundraising, all of those good things.
Yes. Yes. HBCU Club of Muskegon is a 501c3. We are a nonprofit. So community, I will be sending letters out to businesses, to organizations, to churches to help us fund not only our college tour, but just help us fund our programs that we do. Because when we have guest speakers come in, we paying for the guest speakers to come in. When we provide refreshments for the students and parents, we paying for it. So we have to keep funds going in order to make this program success. We are starting in year six, yes. You know, year six. So I'm super excited about what we are doing in the community. I'm super excited that my students are doing well. I have college students that are here in state. I have college students that are all over out of state. I got college students that are graduating. And the blessing is that we are making impact. We have success stories. We have data to prove it.
All right.
What I do comes from the bottom of my heart. I'm very passionate about making a difference in kids. Like, I'm very passionate about just showing the community what it takes for a student to go to school, whether they want to go to school in state or out of state. Will it be bumps? Absolutely. Will it be hiccups? Absolutely. Are we going to be proactive? Absolutely. Are we going to complain from time to time? Absolutely. So everything that I said, it's a learning process, but it sets you up for success to be a conqueror once you become an adult. Because one thing about going to HBCU, you're going to go through a lot of tests, but trust and believe those tests, you will have a testimony at the end of the day. That's a sermon right there.
All right. And I want to put, even though your club is high school students, you keep in touch with your students once they start college. You don't drop them off.
Yes. I keep in touch with my students once they graduate from college. Once they relocate, they still call me from time to time. Miss Tara, can you cash at me? Miss Tara, can you DoorDash me? Or Miss Tara, I need. Or Miss Tara, can you write me a letter of reference? Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. And it's called mentoring.
Yeah. So, and once you get involved in a student's life, it doesn't end with a graduation in most cases. It's a relationship.
Yeah, it's a relationship. It's all about building relationship. A lot of time people have programs, they just have it for a minute, or they just have it to get the accolades of that student. I stay with the students long term. You know, and it's funny because I saw one of my former students the other day, and that particular student is like 28 years old. And I said, I remember when you was in high school at Heights, cutting up. And now, you know, they working, got a job, got kids, and, you know, they doing great. Yes. And they will always say, Miss Carson, thank you. Even though you was rough on us, I appreciate it. Now I understand why you said the things that you are saying. Now I understand with my kids how you used to fuss with us. And I said, honey, I said, if I don't fuss, you need to be concerned, because trust and believe, I'm fussing because I love you. And
yeah. Miss Carson, I got about 1 minute left. Yeah. Tell folks how they can get in touch with you.
Yes, get in touch with me, hbcuclubmuskegon@gmail.com, area code 231-736-2037. Come see us tomorrow from 11 to 12:30 p.m. at Corrine's Restaurant, 90 West Broadway Avenue in the city of Muskegon Heights. Come support Corrine, but also come get information about the HBCU Club of Muskegon.
Ms. Carson, thank you so much for joining us. More importantly, thank you for your commitment to the students here in West Michigan. As I'll slide this in for our first family, my sister. Okay. It's always good seeing you.
Good seeing you, first fam.
All right. Folks, listen, my brother Gregory T, it's good to see you on today. It is Friday. It is a beautiful fall Friday. If you want to make your weekend better, find a way, find an excuse, find a reason. Compel yourself to go out and be a blessing to somebody else. It'll make your day better, make your life better. I am Melvin Burns. I co-host with my brother Gregory T. We'll see you next week. This has been Community Focus.